Hello, this is Les Brown, Mrs. Mamie Brown's baby boy, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show. Listen, continue to listen, and you'll discover your greatness.
Make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey, welcome to the Kick-Ass Life Show, and this is your host, Mr. Wood, sitting here overlooking the gorgeous Lake Okanagan in beautiful Kelowna, British Columbia. Boy, do I have a guest for you. This lady, pretty special, her new book, 52 Ways to Live a Kick-Ass Life. What do you think? Think it's worth it? Of course it is. Awesome. And before she comes on, I asked her, I said, what is your favorite music? Who's your favorite band? Have a little listen, see what you think. Here we go. Yep, you may have guessed who it is. She is a badass. There's no doubt about that. And she kicks ass. You know, she's going to share a little bit about, you know, why she chose to live a kick-ass life. And, you know, how she overcomes her own fears and gets through them. So it's really, it's going to be a great show. And again, her book, 52 Ways to Live a Kick-Ass Life. Now, that being said, I do want to remind everybody that we're going to be doing the draw very soon here. Remember, once a month, I'm going to do a draw for an hour of free coaching. And the way to get your name in that hat is simply go to either The Kick-Ass Life or Amplified Network Marketing, one of my two shows on iTunes, and just write a review, take a screenshot, and then post that screenshot on the Amplified Network Marketing Facebook page. And once a month, we're going to do a draw, and your name will stay in there. So if you don't get drawn this month, it will be there next month, and the month after, and the month after. So do not worry. You will be there lots. And if you haven't listened to the coaching I did with Debbie, have a listen in. Again, we can coach on any subject you want, whether it's relationships, whether it's intimacy, it can be anything. It can be network marketing, business, success, money mindset, you name it. The things that I can, certainly the things I like to coach on anyway. So that being said, I really just back from my week on beautiful Thatch Key Resort. It's our private island in Belize. And we just did a friends and family week. And I was asking my son today, I said, Ben, what was your favorite part of the trip? And he talked about one dive. I think we did 11 dives together. And one dive, he just got certified the last time we were there. And it was a dive where this turtle came swimming between us and he got to stroke this turtle. And then just after that, this shark came right between my legs. We were actually hunting for a lionfish. And lionfish are really bad on the reef. They destroy the reef because they eat about 12 fish a day. So it's the only fish that we're allowed to, you know, shoot in the reserve to protect the reserve. And they're really good eating. So it's a good combination. So Ben had no conscience about this. He says, Dad, this is good for everyone. It tastes good. We save fish's lives. We save the reef. This is awesome. And I get to carry a big old harpoon underwater. Anyway, so you just hope you've been good to your kids, you know, if they're swimming behind you with a great big harpoon. Excuse me, coughing away there. Listen to me. And then, so this shark came up between my legs and it was a nursing shark. So I managed to grab its tail and I turned it over. They go docile if you turn it over. It's about 5 feet long, this thing. And my son came over and was rubbing the belly of this shark. And I think I mentioned it on one of the other Kick-Ass Life shows. But again, you know, when he talked about it yesterday, he just said, that was my highlight, to rub the belly of a shark. I'm thinking, how lucky are we to live the kick-ass life that we do? So With that being said, we have a kick-ass life practitioner who is really more of a colonel in the ranks. She really does like to lead a kick-ass life. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the wonderful Andrea Owen. Well, I always say I'm excited. I know I always start the show the same way, but I am so excited. This woman I pay homage to for so many reasons. And every day when I do my gratitudes, I wouldn't say every day her name comes up in my mind, but certainly her name, her heart, her passion, her drive comes up in my mind very, very consistently. And even though we don't hang out a whole lot, I just want to sort of honor her and make sure that everyone understands this show has impacted so many people. 200 countries, over 1 million downloads. And, you know, it's because of her, because, you know, she owns the brand Your Kick-Ass Life, and she had the depth and the passion and the ability to have no fear and say, Dave, go ahead, use it. And you know, so it takes a remarkable person to not live in fear and allow something to blossom like she has. So Andrea, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. And that what a nice thing to say. Yeah, it really was like, do I want to come from a place of fear or do I want to come from a place of love? And so choosing love always wins.
You know what? It really does. And I feel like, you know, we don't spend a whole lot of time together because we are quite busy. But I feel like even just reconnecting today, it was like yesterday we spoke, right?
I know. And it's been over a year. But I do want to say, though, I was really mad in the beginning when I first met you.
I know. I got your you sent me a pissy letter as well. It was like, I got the pissy letter from the lawyer.
Drafted from my attorney. Right. And I was mad. I was more mad at myself for not taking the kickasslife.com. And I was like, damn it. But yes. But then I wouldn't have met you.
You know what? I have a dream one day that one day I'm going to come to you and say, Andrea, here it is. Have it back.
I know. Me too, actually. Me too.
You know, and Andrea, I want to say this. I have a friend who likes to be called Andrea. Now, are you an Andrea or an Andrea?
I'm not an Andrea. Andrea sounds very fancy. And I mean, I'm kind of fancy, but it is Andrea. It's more of the Valley Girl, Southern California pronunciation.
Yeah, I know. But guess what? You know, you're just, I want to open with this. I don't normally do this, but I want to let everyone know that, you know, your podcast, which is Your Kick-Ass Life, I've listened to you in your podcast, and I said to you, I don't listen to a whole lot of podcasts, but I certainly have listened to yours and your journey to write your book. And ladies and gentlemen, drum roll, bing, you did it.
I did it. Yes. 2 years.
I know. And you got a young family. You got, I mean, these little kids who are, I mean, you're just walking in with your daughter into her precocious stage, right?
Yes. Four. My son is 6.
Isn't it the most horrifying thing when you look at a kid and they speak to you with your voice and you see your face etched in theirs? It's like they've learned everything from you, and you're saying, you know, I've just spent 3 years teaching this kid to walk and talk, and now I just want it to sit down and shut up.
And not be so sassy and spunky. Yes, my daughter is very much a replica of me, and it's kind of funny to watch her, but yeah, not always.
Yeah, well, you know. Well, listen, first of all, congratulations on the book. I mean, everyone's been telling me for the last 10 years, you got to write a book, you got to write a book, you know. And I've got like 19 books running around my head and none in print. So I had my children's book was a bestseller. But you know, I just know the dedication it takes. And, you know, it's called, what is it, 52 Ways to Lead a Kick-Ass Life.
Mm-hmm. To live a kick-ass life. Yes. And the subtitle is BS-Free Wisdom to Ignite Your Inner Badass and Live the Life You Deserve.
Oh, come on. Repeat that slowly. So because you got to do that. Yeah, you got to do that with a little bit more. Like,
whole thing.
Yeah, let me hear
52
it.
52 Ways to Live a Kick-Ass Life. BS-Free Wisdom to Ignite Your Inner Badass and Live the Life You Deserve.
BS, free wisdom, you know. And when you were on my show last time, you know, a lot of people reached out and said they really loved this this combination energy. And, you know, obviously the kick-ass life for me has become synonymous with the brand and for you too. And what is it about that word? What is it about the word kick-ass that sort of resonates so deeply with people?
I just, you know, and this for me started well before I got into this business. And I always used to say to myself, life's too short for it to not kick ass. And I didn't want a mediocre life. I didn't even want a great life. I wanted an amazing kick ass life, the best I could make it. And once I finally realized, because back then I thought that was up to other people when I first started saying that to myself. And then it was like, what do you mean it's up to me? So once I took responsibility for it, I ran with it and just realized like the best way for you to create a kick-ass life is to create it yourself. And that's really cool because you're in control.
Right, right. And this journey to write a book, to be able to sort of bring, well, first of all, the idea of it and then living it. Bringing it to life and then having people follow you because of it. I mean, I always say the hardest thing for anyone, and not really the hardest, but it certainly is maybe a concept a lot of people don't get, is to create a following where people will follow you down the path of life. You know, it's not one product they buy from you. It's a resonance with who you're being and they just want to be a part of it. They want to be part of your own personal revolution. And I feel that that's what you've done and certainly it's what I aspire to. So, you know, when talk about the book, talk about the journey to actually write a book, to take, you know, living practices and actually bring it into a written format so other people can learn from it.
Yeah, well, the idea, I knew I always wanted to write a book since the time I was about 11 years old. And when I got into this business, I figured it would probably be self-help, but I wasn't sure on what topic. And you know, briefly, my brief background, what got me to actually to live a kick-ass life was my world got turned upside down. I was married, I got married in my 20s and, my ex-husband and I had been together for a total of 13 years. We'd been together for a long time and we were talking about starting our own family and trying to conceive our first child. And I found out he had been having an affair for about 7 months with our neighbor. And right when I found out, I also found out she was pregnant. And so we divorced and it was very chaotic and dramatic and so much went on in that year. It was about a year before I actually pulled myself up off the ground and started to heal. And then when I did, that's when I signed up for life coaching school. And that's when I sort of put myself on this fast track to personal development and just devoured everything I could. I was determined not to live as a victim and not to have that event that happened,
Your life. Yeah.
It was just a circumstance. And so, but I'm so grateful that it happened because it was really finally my turn to look in the mirror and say, okay, where is my part in this? Like, where do I need to take responsibility? And I get to now completely determine my life. And I am my own.
I just want to interrupt. Only for a second.
Yeah.
I mean, there are like 15 gems just been dropped, big bombs that were dropped on this audience. And I don't know if they've had time to really collect what you just said. I mean, the idea that the circumstances that you were in did not define because of your ability to start to invest in yourself. So this idea, okay, so this massive thing happened that can really slow many people down and a lot of women, you know, their husbands.
Yeah, and it sucked. I'm not going to say it.
Yeah. And you went through that, you said. But I just want to get people to hear these things you just said, all right? And then you talked about taking 100% responsibility for your life. Not for what he did wrong, but for your life, you know, not being the victim. And then you talked about this idea of investing in yourself, of making you the priority and really making personal growth the pathway you chose. I just want people to hear that again, because some people listening right now are stuck. And so, I mean, those are three massive gems.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what I realized was that I got to choose. I got to choose if I wanted to tell that story from a place of victimhood or from a place of, you know, this is my testimony. This is what is making me stronger. This is what I'm building my foundation on. Yeah, I was at rock bottom, but this is a perfect place for me to start over. And so over the years of healing and working with clients and doing my own work, I started just collecting all these kind of steps, if you will, that I took that I still work on. I mean, these aren't things that I just checked off and, you know, now it's 2014, I'm good. You know, I don't need to work on it anymore. No, these are still, and I'm really transparent about there's three specific chapters that were the hardest for me to write. They were about letting go of control, perfectionism, and comparison. I mean, these are things I still take one day at a time. And, you know, to speak briefly what you said about gathering a following is that's what time and time again I get told that people love about me is that I talk about stuff I still struggle with like on a day-to-day basis and I talk to people how I'm getting through it.
Yeah. Well, one thing I just noticed, I mean, we haven't spoken about that. You and I just had a little brief chat before the show, but obviously, you know, this is all, I don't have a list of things I'm going to ask you here, but I just noticed the 52 weeks in a year and 52 ways to live a kick-ass life. Obviously, there's this, my mindset of something we can focus on and practice on a weekly basis. Is that, was that the theme? Was that something you thought about?
I did. And it's funny because when I wrote the book, and if anyone goes traditional publishing, you'll know, you know, you have an acquisitions editor and they help you write it. And some of my chapters were overlapping and I wanted to drop them. And they were like, nope, if you're going to drop them, you need to create more because we want it to be 52. So the publishing house definitely knew that 52 was a great number. But yeah, they're so small. Like I wanted them to be bite-sized chapters. And you don't have to read it in order because I don't know about you guys, but sometimes self-help books can be a little heavy for me, this personally. And you have to start, you know, from start to finish, but this one isn't. You can read all the 52 chapters, pick one like, oh, okay, I've been on the yo-yo dieting forever. I'm going to go read about that. Or I have a really hard time talking crap to myself in my head. I'm going to read about that. So you can, you know, you can pick and choose what you want, what's most important to you.
I like that. It's like having a great bathroom book where you just pick
it's
it
like
up.
It's like a menu. Yeah. That's what I said. Yeah.
Like I always say the best books are the ones you, you know, you sit in the bathroom until your legs start to tingle and you can't stand up and you try to walk out the door and you fall flat on your face. That's a good book.
One of my friends sent me a picture of hers on the back of her tank and I was so pleased.
Of her tank. I don't know if I've ever heard a toilet called a tank, but I like it. I know what you mean.
You know the tank part.
I understand. No, it just sounds great. She had it on the back of her tank. I see her in this great big turret in the front shooting people. Yeah. All right. So 52 ways. Let's go into it a little bit. Let's uncover the. I'm gonna you know, just sort of open the book. But before I do, actually, I want to ask a question. The toughest part of you doing this, you know, obviously a lot of us are busy and many of us wear the mantle of busyness. I'm too busy. I've got kids. I've got this. I'm running that, blah, blah, blah. You know, my good friend, Mike Dooley from The Secret, he's like my brother from another mother. I mean, he is writing two books right now and just watching his dedication and, you know, he has to get up every day at 5 and he blocks off all this time. So he's writing for 3 hours straight every single day and the journey he's going through. I mean, because we talk a lot. You know, obviously talk about how the hardest thing for you to overcome to get it actually into print.
Fear for sure was fear because it seemed what I've noticed over the last few years, every time my life is up leveled or my business is up leveled, new fears come out of the closet. And I joke and I say like, they look like in my mind, they look like skeletons that come out and they're like, hey, you want to dance? Here we are. And I'm like, no, I thought I had you all wrapped up. And it's like, you know, my following gets bigger or, you know, I get an interview with somebody big and, you know, every time, you know, when I got an agent and then I got the book deal, it was like, like feeling like the boa constrictor. So that was tough. It was, you know, now I have a bigger reach. I have a bigger audience. And it was really the fear. And what helped was really, I think the biggest thing that helped me was surrounding myself with awesome people and just getting support. Because if I isolate, I will get lost in my own mind crap and I will never come out. I'll never do it.
Yeah, it's amazing what you're saying there. This whole idea. I mean, I've just reconstructed a new team. And it just feels so, I mean, I feel like I'm now because I've building a team has always been my nemesis, you know, cause I've been a solo act for so long. Mm-hmm. But the idea that of really surrounding myself with people that are better than me and really bring out in me that my gifts, I mean, that really is something hard. I mean, I imagine for you too, right? Initially, this whole idea of just letting go and trusting that these people really have their brilliance in these different areas that you're not experts in, and it allows you to really become better, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And that's why I'm a big fan of masterminds, even if you're not an entrepreneur, but just have that close group of friends where you can get together where it's scheduled out and everybody gets a time to talk about your goals and what's going on and you ask for what you need. And just you meet consistently and they have been for business, they've been instrumental in my success.
Again, I just want to say congratulations one more time. Let's talk about the book deal because, I mean, everyone's got a book lurking inside them somewhere. And typically it's born in the adversity. A lot of people don't get it when they're going through their crap, you know, or the shittiest time of their life is coming up, or, you know, like you talked about, you know, you're losing someone who you were planning on having a family with, and, mm-hmm. you know, he's got someone next door pregnant.
Right.
You know, these devastating things that happen tend to often be the defining moments of our life that really, if we don't play victim, if we take that and use it as a springboard to the future, you know, it actually becomes something that, you know, that creates the fabric of the work we do, of the followings we create. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think that everyone has a story, and they vary how painful they are. And, it's so helpful to other people to tell your story. And so people can see that you lived through it, you became a better person. I think it's so amazing to know how people have become a better person and what they learned from their story, instead of, like you were saying, like just being a victim.
Mm. And here you are, you get this book deal. I mean, so everyone's got this story inside of them. And again, many people have taken the responsibility. They feel that they have something they want to share with the world. How did you go about getting the deal? Because, I mean, again, a lot of people self-publish because it's a simpler process. You know, mm-hmm. you just say yes, you pull the trigger, you pay, and suddenly you got a book, right?
Yep.
You went through a much, much harder route. Can you talk about that process so other people can learn from it?
Yeah, it was... And it was your decision whether to self-publish or go traditional publishing is really based on your intention. What do you want with the book? And if you want it, you know, quick, and you want the book in your hands, if you're going to sell it from the trunk of your car, or, you know, from the stage or whatever, back of the room sales from your website, then by all means, you know, that's what I would do. But for me, my intention was distribution and credibility too, because like you said, it's harder to get a book deal. And so the process of it was, I definitely wanted an agent, a literary agent, because I was not about to be able to read a contract, and, you know, and I wanted someone to be able to shop the book for me with two other publishers, because I can't just call up Simon & Schuster and say, hey, I have this book and I think you should publish it. So you need an agent for that. So I want to mention real quick too how I found my agent. They have a great book that they publish every year. They update it. The you know, now it would be the 2014's Guide to Literary Agents. I got that. I scoured it. But how I got my agent was, I wanted to know who the people were in my industry who were successful authors. I wanted to know who their agent was. So I Googled Gabrielle Bernstein's, I'm sure many of you listening know who she is. I just Googled Gabrielle Bernstein's literary agent, and this agent popped up, and she's also represents a few other people in my world. And so I sent her a query along with my book proposal, which the book proposal is a whole nother conversation in and of itself. And she said, yes. So what helped me definitely is the platform that I had. I don't have an enormous platform. When I say platform, I mean followers, you know, social media, email list. But that doesn't mean you can't get a book deal. The publisher that that we sold the book to, they're a smaller publisher on the East Coast. They're called Adams Media. You know, Simon & Schuster said no. Some of the bigger people said no. Sorry, your platform isn't big enough. And I was a first-time author. Also, I had no writing credentials, you guys. Like, I had never been published in the HuffPo or Salon or any of these
Just over the jargon there, the Huffington Post, just for those that don't know what that is.
Sorry.
No, that's all right.
The Huffington Post. Like, I didn't, not even in, like, my high school newspaper. I just had a blog. That was it. So, yeah, just to anyone listening who thinks that they can't do it, you can. I mean, you might need to work on building your audience, but you absolutely, they're out there. They're out there needing your message.
A lot of people get trapped in this building the audience because they want to sell something right away, right? They got this, they burst out the gate with everything they want is to try and make money. And quite often building an audience, especially in today's market where everything is free. I mean, I want to build a nuclear warhead. I can go on Google and figure out how to do it, right? I mean, it's uh-huh. this crazy, crazy stuff that everything's for free. Everything that anyone ever talks about, you know, the 27 ways to tie your shoes, you know, you just Google it and you're going to come up with, you know, 100 different people's versions of doing that. So, you know, it's a very different world. But, you know, obviously talk a little bit about the service heart, you know, how people who create followings quite often, they give so much more than they asked in return. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. And it's a lot of work. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's easy peasy, but Yeah, start a blog. You can start a podcast. You can start, you know, something. You can create free ebooks or, you know, YouTube tutorials. Those are a really big deal now. And, or, you know, you can make those little memes on meme generator and put them on Instagram like crazy. And I know a lot of people that they have a ton of followers basically because they have dedicated themselves to that and just created inspiration. And yes, don't come out of it's sort of like you can use the metaphor of being on a first date, and you wouldn't ask someone to marry you on the very, very first date. So why should this be any different?
Well, actually, we could take it even cruder than that. You know, for those of you that have ever slept with someone on the first date, you know, how long did that relationship last?
Right? I've only done that once. And it did not work out.
Well, I've done it more than once, but the idea is that, you know, that there is no relationship. So if you sell something to someone without building that trust, quite often, you know, they're just not going to be around. And having someone who buys from you once, oh, that's great. Having someone that trusts you and wants to walk the path and will always, whatever you bring out, there's a fascination or there's something that about your particular style and energy that they have a relationship with. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand coming out. That, you know, that there really is a heart of service by most people who are great today. They give a lot. I mean, they're strategic in their selling. Mm-hmm. And let's not forget. I mean, making money is a great part of it.
Right.
But I want to open the book now. And I thank you for sharing a little bit about the book deal and that. But let's open it. Talk about your favorite chapter. I know you've got four chapters for free on mm-hmm. your website. So listen up, everyone. This is another strategy in the old days, you had to buy the book to read the book, or you'd go to the library, or you'd go into chapters and you'd read three or four chapters before you decided whether you're going to buy it, right? Having four chapters on the website allows people to go and have a relationship with the work and decide if it's something they want to buy. One question personally, this is more my interest. Did you put the first four chapters or are they random chapters?
No, they're random. I asked, I took what I thought were the most important. And I also asked my editor, because she ended up knowing the book, you know, like the back of her hand, asked her, because, you know, sometimes we get into this business so deeply and we think we know what's best for our people. And so anyway, it was nice to have a second opinion. And nope, they're not random, but they're not in order.
Okay. So open the open the book for me and take me to one of your favorite chapters. And what was it about that chapter that really mean something to you? Why did you write it?
God, there's so many. You're making me pick one. It's like Sophie's Choice. I'm picking my favorite chapter. I have one.
From your 52 favorites, what's your...
all right. It would probably be today. It would be chapter 7, Stop Apologizing and People Pleasing.
Hey, listen, I want you to hear what she just said there. Today, this is what life's like, right? Today, her favorite chapter. Now I could phone her tomorrow afternoon because life gets in the way. And she'd say, well, actually today, you know, it's chapter 6. Last week, Wednesday, it was chapter 2 because it's relevant. That's why 52 chapters is so cool.
Yeah. Now I'm reading the whole table of contents and I'm like, no, I should have picked that one. Another one is,
Whoa. I'm not gonna let you off the hook that easily.
All right.
Stop apologizing. All right. Just talk a little bit about, cause obviously why you like it is because it resonates. There was obviously a time where you lived the other side of this coin and now you've stepped over into this new threshold where you live this work. Can you talk about what it was like when you were apologizing for everything and kissing too many bums?
Yeah. Well, and yeah, just apologizing and people pleasing, just saying yes to things I didn't want to do. And it was for me all throughout my 20s, pretty much, I had kind of morphed and conformed into what I thought other people wanted me to be. And really all I wanted, all any of us want is love and to feel loved, to be loved, to give love. And I thought that was my ticket. You know, you want me to do this dance, then I'll do this dance. You want me to wear this, then I'll wear this. And it was exhausting and it didn't get me what I wanted. And so, you know, on the same side of the coin is apologizing. I find that so many people, especially women, apologize for, sometimes they start sentences that way. Like, I'm sorry, but why? I've gotten to the point now where when I apologize, it is absolutely genuine. And I apologize to my kids maybe like once a week.
You wait till they get older. You'll be about once every 25 minutes.
Jerk. And I'm like, ugh. You know, and just like saying sorry from your heart rather than than trying to, I don't even know why we say sorry. It's like you're apologizing for being who you are. And there's no reason to do that ever.
Well, you know, I was in my last program, I was just teaching ideas. It's called The Transformed Woman. And it's a specific program for women. And, you know, as I'm talking to these women, we're talking about this, this concept of saying no, because it's so big. And that's what I love about this chapter, you know, that it's very, very hard for people today to say no. So they say yes to so many things, completely overcommit, and then we'll typically have to make an excuse or even tell a lie to get out of stuff because exactly. They're so afraid to tell the truth. And you know, this is such a big deal, you know, and I said, look at the concept. Imagine someone invites you for dinner and you just say, actually, no thanks. Everyone on the call right now, oh, everyone on the show is like, I couldn't do that. I'm just saying, well, actually, no thanks. You know, my great auntie's just flown in and she's got thrombosis in her left toe.
Right.
And we make up this bullshit story because we're so scared just to say, no, actually, no, it's not going to work tonight. You know, but I mean, it's a crazy thing that most people lie rather than tell the truth, right?
Yeah, I just had to write an email yesterday. I got invited to do something for my business and after thinking about it, I didn't want to do it. It wasn't a hell yes anymore. And so I had to send an email and decline. And I apologized for giving short notice because it was about a week out. And I didn't feel the need to go into a long explanation as to why. The old me would have done that. Now, if this person were to email me back and ask why, I would simply say, it doesn't feel like it's a good fit anymore. But I just felt like I didn't have to. I don't need to. And so it's just, I give tools in the book too about how, because it really, it's practice. It takes practice to do this. And so one of the tools that I give is buy yourself some time. Because I think so many people, they're just like, I can't say no right off the bat. So what can you say instead that's not a yes? Like, I need to look at my schedule. I need to check with my spouse. I need to check with the magic eight ball, like, or whatever it is that you need to do just to buy some time.
Hold on. I'm shaking. It said no. The magic eight ball's default. The magic eight ball said no. I love it.
Magic eight ball said check back later. Yeah. No, just to be able to gather your thoughts, to be able to come back later, whether it's in an email or a text. If you're too chicken, that's okay.
You know what I love? Again, I'm interrupting. I apologize. But what I love about this, and again, you got to get this. What Andrea's given you is a middle ground to be able to go from, you know, saying yes and kissing too many bums to a middle ground where you're not saying no because you haven't got the courage quite yet. You're just saying something other than yes until later on when you realize that people survive and in fact they like it. Most people prefer a straight answer because they understand where they're at as opposed to ambiguity of uncertainty because, well, they said yeah, but I'm not sure they're coming, right? This idea of, I always say my word is law in the universe. So this middle ground, Andrea, is so powerful for people.
It is. It really is. And another one is too, is to have like a go-to routine. I was listening to another podcast actually, and Brené Brown is someone I think is amazing. And she was talking about this topic and she says that what she does. And when someone asks her something that she's really wants to say no to, but it's going to be uncomfortable, she spins her wedding rings in three complete circles before she gives an answer. So she's pausing because her mind wants her to say yes, but her soul and her heart and her body wants her to say no. And so she gave the example of, she was picking up her daughter from school and her daughter's teacher said, hey, can you make 3 dozen cupcakes for tomorrow? We're having a bake sale. And she was like, no. And so she did that. She was like, she spun her wedding ring 3 times and she said, no, actually I can't. I don't have time. And got in the car and drove away.
Right.
And like for women, that's like,
well, again, you know, and it's the challenge I always see is, you know, once you start selling your soul to the devil, in other words, once you start saying yes to things that you have no intention or you even dislike, the moment you say it, you walk away with a heavy heart. You know, it just is an awful place to live consistently. And because it's such a habit, right? There's that habitual behavior of yes. So I can see why this is one of your favorite chapters. Talk about the people-pleasing part, because yes isn't always the culprit of people-pleasing. There's other ways that people live in the world of people-pleasing. What is it? What's one lesson we can take away from the chapter that will stop us, apart from saying no to things? Is there another sort of strategy hidden in there?
People pleasing, you know, I just always wonder, like, I love powerful questions. And one of my favorites is what if it wasn't a big deal? And I think that I know that's why I combined it in this chapter. And because I'm under the belief that they do go hand in hand. And I think that I'm bouncing around here, but I do think that, again, all of us want to be, it's just how my mind works. It's like ricochets in there. But I think that all of us want to be loved. And really, when we're people pleasing, when we're saying yes to all these things that we don't want to do, we're coming from a place of, I really want this person to like me. I want them to love me. I want approval. And so that's where you need to look.
I'm just jumping because I think what you just said here, what I love about what you just said, and that's what I was looking for. There's this magic thing, apart from just saying yes to people, which is easy to understand. Okay, I say yes to a lot of things. Some people will overtly go out of their way to please or try to be liked as opposed to being authentic. So that's where the mask comes on, right? So someone's wearing the mask to go up because they want to be liked. They're wanting to be liked is more important than their authenticity. And so their authenticity starts being put in the cupboard more and more and more until it's lost altogether. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
Yeah, it is. It is exactly. And so if you do find yourself with these habits, is I invite you to take a really, really hard look at how you truly, truly feel about yourself. And it's going to be uncomfortable. Like, do you really have unconditional love for yourself? Because I think that that's what that people pleasing is stemming from.
I love it. Love it. Good job. Okay. So take us into another chapter. I just want to explore a couple of three just because obviously there's 52 and we've only got about 15 minutes left. So we're just going to do a couple more. What was the hardest? What was the hardest one to write? Okay, go. No, do that one first. Do that
one. Am I allowed to cuss on this podcast?
You can cuss, of course.
Okay. Well, the chapter is called Don't Take Other People's Piles of Shit. Chapter 12.
Oh, okay. No, it's good. I like it. I was just thinking about all the times I've taken someone's shit. Go on, carry on.
Well, and it comes from, and I always credit my best friend and colleague here, which you've had on the show, Amy Smith, the Joy Junkie. And she has this great metaphor and she says, okay, what if someone was trying to hand you a pile of shit? Like literally they had a pile of shit in their arms and they're trying to hand it to you. What would you do? Like, would you take it? Like, no, you'd say, you keep your pile of shit. I don't want your pile of shit. You keep it over there. It stinks and I don't want it. And so the whole premise of this chapter is about people's judgments and criticisms and opinions of you. So what if you looked at it like that? If their words coming out of their mouth were just their own piles of shit and they're trying to hand it to you, you don't have to take it. You're at choice there.
Love it. Yeah, I often use an analogy that's very, very similar. I always say when someone, it's called a projection, you know, when someone is, you know, what they say is, says more about them than it ever says about you. But I always imagine when someone's doing a projection on me is that they just vomited on me and it's that warm, stinky vomit. And then what I do is I get out a spoon and I actually start to eat it because I have a choice, right? And that's the thing when we take on other people's, as you call it, shit. Something happened to me the other night, and this may be very relevant to this conversation. I was out in a bar. I'm running a program with Sandra Yancey, who's the CEO of eWomen Network. And her and I are very, very close friends, and I'm much closer after this week. And I mean, a friendship is an evolving thing for me. We went to the bar afterwards, and we'd met this guy the night before, and he was a tad strange. You know, a wealthy guy, but tad strange. And the second night we went in there, he came and sat with us, but he was being incredibly manipulative. And he started to lay this sort of guilt trip on Sandra. And there's something inside me. You have to understand, I've never been in a fight. I'm not afraid of fighting. I just never been in a fight. And so this guy, and he's, you know, my height, you know, I don't know him. He's a little strange. I don't know what he's, you know, what kind of, but I looked at him and I said, hey, I said, buddy, do me a favor. His name's Mark. I said, Mark. I said, and I used profanity, deep, deep, deep profanity, energetically. I told the F-bomb, right? I said, listen, you know, why don't you just, you know, get lost, right? And he looked at me and he starts this guilt trip again to her, not to me. I says, listen, there's three choices right now. You can shut up and be kind. I don't think I use the word shut up. I said, you can stay here and be kind and stop that nonsense and stop laying a guilt trip on Sandra. You can get lost. Or I said, you and I can go outside and have a little rumble if you want. If that's the way you want to deal with it. He said, well, actually, I don't fight. I said, great, nor do I. So we've got two choices right now. I said, so I suggest you just get lost, right? And I'm being very, very dark. And Sandra is horrified. Because I mean, it's two guys and we're going at it. And I am loud. I'm not being quiet right now. And that was pretty late, right? And we're teaching in the morning. I mean, we're both training in the morning. And what I was interesting was hearing her explanation of it the next day. Because in the end, he walks away. And I yell after him, Mark, it's not about you. It's about the way you're treating Sandra. So you are welcome back. So I wasn't angry with him. I was angry with his behavior towards this woman. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and she's like looking at me. I said, Sandra, don't worry. He'll come back. And I said, and I guarantee I'll have a hug from him. And it was pretty dark. And it was pretty, I mean, it was a venomous kind of, you know, certainty from me with my profanity. Anyway, lo and behold, he comes back. I stand up. I said, hey, I said, obviously I want to just check in. You're coming back to be kind, right? And now we're standing face to face. And he says, yeah. He put out his hand. I said, no. I said, I'm a hugger. We'll have a hug and if you want to sit down. He says, no, I don't hug. I said, well, you have a choice. You can get lost again. I was the same person. Or we can have a hug on my terms. You can come and sit with us and you're going to treat Sandra with respect. It's up to you. Anyway, so he gave me a hug. He sat down and he apologized. This is the big news for the women listening in. Was Sandra said before that incident, what she really checked in with is she would normally have said, oh, it doesn't matter. It's fine. Right? Mm-hmm. And she realized what he was doing to her. As a woman, it doesn't matter. It was fine. She said, thank you. I accept your apology. And she said that one shift for her was so big. And, you know, for the whole situation was so scary. It was venomous. It was dark. And yet there was this big hug. He came and sat back down. He treated her with respect. Over. No energy in me. I have this thing called immediate forgiveness. But isn't that interesting how that one little sentence for a lot of women, especially you work with a lot of women, oh, it's fine, as opposed to just the truth, right?
Absolutely. And it's so interesting you say that at the very end, because I've been talking to my 4-year-old daughter about this, because I think it's just normal language for us to, when someone apologizes, we say, it's okay. And my daughter did that because I apologized to her about something. I was snappy at her and I told her I was sorry. And she goes, it's okay. She's so cheerful. And I talked to her about it and I said, if it's, you know, and I'm trying to explain it to a 4-year-old. And I said, what you can say when someone apologizes to you and says that they're sorry is you say, thank you. So it's like, I'm at 4 years old, I'm trying to tell her sometimes it's not okay. Like if someone was an ass to you, it's not okay. And you accept their apology and you move on from there. But I think just that shift in language is huge.
Mm, yeah. And again, well, watching her as a CEO of a company for women and really talking to these women the next day about her lesson was how many times, you know, things are fine when they're not fine. So the level of truth, let's do one more. We've got time for one more chapter. Take us into a place. I was going to ask you, what was the hardest one to write for you?
Maybe it's
something you're in or you're still working through.
It definitely has to be giving up control. And I have to find, I can't remember what I named the chapter, but it's definitely one that is one day at a time and giving up. And I'm actually thinking about getting it tattooed on my body. the word acceptance.
When you said but, I was thinking you were going to say bottom. I'm having this tattooed on my bottom.
No, on my body, on my wrist. The word acceptance and really accepting things as they come. And I think that a lot of women who are high achieving and smart and ambitious and do amazing things with their lives tend to really want to control everything. And I'll tell you what, David, that was the thing that made my life crazy. I tried to control other people because I felt like in my mind, I felt like if they would just act and do and behave the way that I wanted, everyone would be happier. So I wanted everything on my terms, like everyone's behavior, everyone's actions, everything on my terms. And that's what I was basing my happiness on. And so it is hard to let that go. Mm. But things too, like we want to move, we want to leave the state that we're in, and we don't know where that's going to be, and it's reliant on my husband getting a job somewhere. And it is so difficult for me to sit back, but I've done it, to sit back and just trust that wherever we are meant to be, we are going to end up. That doesn't mean sit on your ass and not do anything. It just, I don't let circumstances take me away and just take me out and destroy me for the day or the week anymore. It just, it is what it is. And it's that for someone like me who's been diagnosed with anxiety disorder, that is a huge monumental shift in my life, is letting that go.
Yeah. I mean, is there any, do you have any faves though? Is there, if you could choose anywhere right now, do you have a place that you'd love to go to or live?
I'd love to go to Portland.
Portland. Oh gosh, that's so pretty there. So pretty. All right. You know, we don't have a lot longer left. I want to sort of shut the book for a sec. Unless there's something, is there anything else you want to say about the book? I mean, why don't you tell people A, where they can get it? And B, you know, cause I mean, this is the kind of book, it's almost like, Jack Canfield is a really good friend of mine, you know, chicken soup for the soul. It sounds like chicken soup for the mind and soul, right? In the sense that it really is this very practical, you know, strategies for really living a kick-ass life, sort of a modern version of that. So it's a really good, it sounds like a great gift. It sounds like a gift that you could give someone. And within the book is hidden maybe a few chapters that you know is something they're dealing with, right? And so it's really got the gift appeal as well as the I need one appeal too, right?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And that's what, you know, because it came out over the holidays and that's what a lot of people did. And I just got an email the other day from a woman who got it as a gift. And she emailed me and said, thank you so much. My sister gave this to me and it changed my life. I've been wanting to move to Hawaii from the States. And I finally told myself, when am I going to do that when I'm 60, 65? So she said, and I'm taking the plunge because of your book. Nice. And it's things like that where people are taking action because again, life's too short for it to not kick ass, you guys. So come on, do something.
Awesome. So, you know, what would you like to do? Where do they get it? Show them where they get it. I'm sorry.
Oh, easy at yourkickasslife.com. I can, send you a signed copy, personalized signed copy. You can find it pretty easy there or on amazon.com. Just look up 52 ways to live a kickass life. And it's also in Barnes and Noble chapters in Canada. If you're up there, IndieBound and, all major bookstores.
Oh, so great. And again, so congratulations on that one. We've still got a few minutes left. Let's talk about the vision of the future. Book shut. You've got that one out the way right now. And obviously the marketing side of that, the next 15 years of your life, you know that, right? I mean, that's the thing about books, you know, I mean, you know, John Gray was on my show. He's a good friend of mine, you know, and you know, his book was one of the best selling books of an entire decade. Mm-hmm. But he talked about sort of 15 year cycles. He said books come in like 15 year cycles where you really put a lot of your energy and people are so interested by it, you know, that they want you to come and speak on their stages about the principles, you know, what are those 52 ways, right? So, you know, it's opening up a whole new door and a whole new chapter for you. So congratulations. But what's the future bring? What are you looking at now? What's your next step?
Are you ready? I am going to go back to school and get my doctorate in social psychology.
Ah, Dr. Owen.
I know.
Get over here. Well, you know, in America, it is such a profound thing that, you know, Dr. Oz, Dr. Phil, Dr. This, Dr. Whatever, you know, DR means a lot in the North American market, right?
Mm-hmm. It does. And it's something that I've wanted to go back and do. I got my bachelor's degree. I didn't even finish that until I was 7 months pregnant with my youngest. And I always knew I would go back. I just didn't know what subject, but I am fascinated with people and their motivations for change and behaviors in groups and why we do certain things. And I am a science nerd to my bones and I love evidence. I loved the book, The How of Happiness. I can't get enough of it. So that's what I'm going to spend the next 6 to 7 years buried in research.
Wow. You know, a good friend of mine, Dr. Paul Sheely, sort of redefine, you know, becoming a doctor of the science of transformation. And I'll introduce you to him, but he's a great, great guy, great resource. And he had the Sheely Institute, which is, you know, he's done so much work on the brain and transformation, but now he actually is a doctor and exactly, he'd be a great role model and just a beautiful man. So I'd love to introduce you and maybe a great guy,
awesome.
Great guy to have on your show. It'd be a good way to get to know him.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
No worries. So, we got 3 minutes left. What do you want to, any
Should
last?
I sing a song?
Sing a song. Yeah, let's go.
I don't know any good songs except kids songs. And I don't even know all the words to those.
Well, sorry, just la. La 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 la.
Okay, so there's this one video that I'm obsessed with, and if y'all are at a computer right now listening to this, you have to Google. I don't know if you might not have been in this generation, David. Not saying that you're old or anything, but did you ever watch Saved by the Bell?
Thanks a lot. What
did you ever watch Saved by the Bell?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so, and I think you're only a couple years older than me. So, Saved by the Bell was this ridiculous show. Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm 38. So my generation, we loved Kelly Kapowski and Zach Morris. So if you Google Jesse and the Sundays, the girls of Saved by the Bell did this video and they are in these ridiculous leotards. It's very like early 90s. And they're singing this song like, if you put your mind to it, go for it. You're gonna break a sweat. It's ridiculous. But it's like about, it's like inspirational. And they're jumping on these like little trampolines working out. And I'm currently obsessed with it. And
you know what's really funny? You can't hear this. I'm playing it right now.
Did you find it?
I'm playing it right now, but you can't hear it. Everyone else can now. Here we go. Oh my gosh, they're in like pink leotards.
It's terrible. It's song leotards. Here's a message that I'm sending
to you. You can do what you want to do. Is that
it? It's so worth watching the whole thing, David.
Well, no, I'm just going to play a second of it. So it's really, that is so 70s.
It's 90s. It's the 90s.
No, but I'm telling you, leotards look like the 70s. Tell me something before I go. You know, I do play songs on my show. What is your favorite band?
Oh, I can't pick just one. I love so many different ones. I love like old Stevie Wonder, Aerosmith, Van Morrison. I even love Kesha, like the music of Kesha. I wrote a lot of my book to that ridiculous music. But right now, yeah, I love just old. I love 70s rock. I mean, Creedence Clearwater Revival and.
Wow.
Yeah. I know, right? James Taylor, Fleetwood Mac.
Stop it now! I can only play like two. When I do your show, I'm going to play a couple of your favorite songs on the intro and the outro, just so you know. And we've already had Saved by the Bell with Jesse and the Sundays on it.
Jesse and the Sundays. you know, okay. So if you're going to play a song, I love Styx, Renegade. I mean, badass song.
Okay,
Styx. One of my Styx Renegade. Yeah.
All right, I'm on it. Hey, listen, we're at that time, 45 minutes, like I promised, and I know you got a call to go to. So, Andrea, thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm doing a little namaste thing right now. You can't see me, but I am. Always a pleasure.
Namaste. I honor the place in you where the entire universe dwells, a place of light, love, peace, and truth. When you're in that place in you and I'm in that place in me, we are one. Namaste. So like I said to you, she's definitely, I think her story about how that book deal came about, it was awesome. And really how to create a following. I always believe, you know, it's not about having people, you know, in a database. It's having people who want to follow you. So, you know, I really, I think she really is the goods, an amazing woman. And again, I feel very, very lucky that, that we were able to come to a compromise, and the Kick-Ass Life Show is there, and your Kick-Ass Life Show is there. You know, they live in the same world helping people. She predominantly works with women, and I work with everyone. It doesn't matter where you come from in the world, 200 countries, well over a million downloads now, so thank you so much. Now, with that being said, this is the other one of her favorite songs. So we're going to play that, and then I'll wrap this puppy up. But this is the wonderful Fleetwood Mac, Landslide.
Can I sail through the changing ocean tides? Can I handle the seasons of my life? Built my life around.
Well, you know, go about your day today. Remember, if you're looking for a vehicle, you can join me on Amplified Network Marketing. And again, even if you're not looking, come and listen to some of the stories over on my new show. They are really transformational, amazing. And again, if you're not happy, if you're not wealthy, and you don't have a way of getting there to both, again, maybe have a listen to 5 or 6 shows before you shut that puppy out. That being said, don't forget, got some great programs coming up. I'm in Vancouver this weekend. Then I'm coming to Edmonton. I'm going to be in Ottawa this, I've got a really busy month in April. And then in month of May, we're going to be in Australia the whole month. And again, the ticket sales are going really, really well for our events in Sydney and in Perth, 4.5 days. And I'm telling you, just make sure you get there. I always say that one of the best investments you'll ever make is the one when you invest in yourself. And I truly believe that. I think it's one of the things that most people neglect is investing in themselves. And so with that being said, I do want to say, if I see you in Australia, make sure you come up and give me a great big hug. And I'll see you across Canada coming up in May. And you can see my house right now. It's so funny. We're gutting this place. We just took the roof off today of the main floor. We have 5 different levels on the main floor. Took the roof off. And it's just gutted. And it's just a wonderful thing. I love reinvention. I love the idea of change. I love the idea of really being able to vision something and bring it to life. And that's what's happening right now. But I also like the idea of being bad to the bone. Hey, we'll see you on the other side. Bad to the bone. I broke 1,000 hearts before I met you. I'll break 1,000 more, baby, before I am through. I wanna be yours, pretty baby, yours and yours alone. I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone. Bad to the bone.
That was kick ass.